Editor of WesternJournalism.com. What makes WesternJournalism.com so special?
Well, Rusty, I think it is very special. We bring you the news as it actually happens. We're one of the places that you can come for the facts, and they're backed up by what's actually happening out there.
You know, a lot of websites, they deal in rumor and innuendo. You guys are really dealing in journalism, is that right?
Oh, absolutely. And there's no question that we're going to bring you pro-American news. I mean, we're going to bring you stuff that makes you proud of the freedoms that we have. And we back up the Constitution every step of the way, but that doesn't influence our reporting. Our reporting is the truth, is 100% accurate.
Make sure you check it out. One of the best websites in the world, WesternJournalism.com. That's WesternJournalism.com.
The Brussels subway station hit by a terror attack in March is open to the public once again. In March, a suicide bomber killed 16 people at the busy downtown station, just as a similar attack rocked the city's international airport. The subway is running today as it normally does, but extra security measures have been put into place. Could Hillary Clinton be considering an all-female ticket? USA Radio's John DeMaster has the story.
The Telegraph saying that after her win over Bernie Sanders in Washington last week, Hillary Clinton is turning her attention to the general election. Her campaign chairman John Podesta tells the Boston Globe that women would certainly be on the list of possible vice presidential candidates. One name that's being discussed in political circles is Elizabeth Warren, whom many on the left wanted to run by herself. For USA Radio News, I'm John DeMaster.
This is USA Radio News. Breaking news online at usaradio.com.
I'm Sean Hayer, the site director at conservativetribune.com. Conservative Tribune is one of the most visited news sites in the world, and the reason is simple. Conservativetribune.com delivers edgy and bold commentary of the news every day. We are unapologetically pro-America, unabashedly conservative. At conservativetribune.com, we don't make apologies for who we are or what we say. If you're looking for more than boring stories and simple thought, visit conservativetribune.com. That's conservativetribune.com.
With 60 cases of the Zika virus already reported in New York, Senator Chuck Schumer is calling for emergency funding to help stem the spread of the illness. The New York lawmaker says nearly $2 billion is needed before the mosquito season takes hold. He says the money could be used for mosquito control programs nationwide. Schumer says with so many women and families looking for action, it's critical that Congress work to approve the funding as soon as possible. A 9-year-old boy is helping raise money for his own adoption. USA's Tammy Rose has more.
9-year-old Tristan is taking charge of his own life.
Lemonade and cookies?
Setting up shop with an old-fashioned lemonade stand. However, the money isn't going toward a new bike or toys, but instead it's helping fund his very own adoption.
Thank you for helping us for adoption.
Foster mom Donnie Davis got the call 4 years ago when Tristan's mom, living a life of prostitution and drugs, left the then 5-year-old on the doorstep of a shelter on a 17-degree January day. But Tristan has a new life now where he feels safe and loved. Thankful for a family to call his very own.
In mine and my husband's hearts, that's our son. Nobody can tell us any different. That is our son.
For USA Radio News, I'm Tammy Rose.
This is USA Radio News. Breaking news online at usaradio.com. Your full
Good
circle
morning,
of care.
Hunterdon. This is
if
Dick
you need
Z,
a physician,
from
call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit
morning,
us on
Hunterdon
the web
kicks off your
at
day by providing you with local news, traffic and
healthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
The head of the Republican National Committee is calling out Donald Trump for his complaining about the election system. Prince Priebus says it's the same system that's been used for years.
It was the same system that elected Abraham Lincoln. It's pretty much the same system that the Democrats use. Delegates and voters choose the nominee. That's what's happening.
All three major Republican candidates appeared at a gala in New York last night. Donald Trump talked about how everybody loves New York.
The values that make us love this state, which has been a symbol of American strength throughout the world.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month.
Or visit us on the web.
Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
The Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce is proud to present HuntertonChamberRadio.com. All business, all talk, all community. Bringing you local news, information, events, and informative programming. Proudly serving the businesses and residents of Hunterdon County, New Jersey.
Good afternoon. We're going to have the weather here in just a second. This afternoon is going to be partly sunny with a high near 74. Southwest winds around 8 miles an hour. Tonight, there's a slight chance of showers between 10 and 11 p.m. Then a chance of showers and thunderstorms after 11. Be mostly cloudy with a low around 53. South winds around 6 miles an hour. The chance of precipitation is 40%. New rainfall amounts of less than a tenth of an inch, except higher amounts possible in thunderstorms. Tuesday will be showers likely and possibly a thunderstorm. Then showers after 2 p.m. and a high near 73. Southwest winds 8 to 13 miles an hour. Chance of precipitation 80%. New rainfall amounts between a quarter and a half of an inch possible. Tuesday night, showers, mainly before 8 p.m. and a low around 46. Northwest winds around 7 miles an hour, and a chance of precipitation is 80%. Wednesday, be mostly sunny with a high near 64, and Wednesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 42. I can take the sun, but we do need the rain, so that's okay. You're listening to Mental Health Matters. This show is compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. And it is NAMI's hour. NAMI is the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and there is a chapter of NAMI in every county in the state of New Jersey, every state in the Union, and overseas. In Hunterdon County, we're all volunteers. We don't have a paid staff. We don't have an office. We work out of our homes. And we try to help people who have someone either in their family or them themselves have a mental health issue. And we do it in various ways. We teach classes. Right now, my wife and I are in the last 2 weeks of a 12-week course called Family to Family, and it helps people understand more what their loved one or their friend, whoever that they know has the mental illness, is going through. And it teaches them more about drugs, you know, prescription drugs, and side effects, what to say, what not to say in a crisis, and, you know, just how to get along and try to understand a little bit better what their loved one is going through. And we do it through support groups. We have a monthly support group that we run for families and people who, and it doesn't have to be blood relative. It can be someone you know, someone you work with, next door neighbor, etc. And today's economy is, you know, as everybody knows, not that great. So a lot of times husband and wives both have to work and may not get home till 6:30 at night. And teachers have more time with the child than the parents a lot of times, through no fault of their own. It's just the way the economy is. But we have a course called Educating the Educators, and it tries to teach teachers what to look for in certain instances and so on and so forth. So if you need to reach out to NAMI Hunterdon, we have a phone number. It's 908-284-0500. We don't man it 24 hours a day, but someone checks it at least once, sometimes twice a day. We guarantee you we'll be back to you within 24 hours. That's a promise. We are very privileged today. We have the executive director of NAMI, Dane County, Wisconsin. Lindsay Wallace with us. Lindsay, you out there?
I'm here.
Okay. I have to ask. Dane County has been on before, on the show before, your predecessor, I used to tease, like, Dane County, where is that? You know, what does it cover? Is there, you know, is it like around Milwaukee or what? If you could just, like, Dane County, I'm not exactly sure where it is, and if you could just explain a little bit about where it is and what it covers and so on and so forth.
So Dane County, Wisconsin is in southeast central Wisconsin. We're about an hour southwest of Milwaukee. We have a population in the county of roughly 450,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're a fairly large county within the city limits itself. We're more so around 250,000. So rather large county and geographic area. We're very urban within Madison, the city, but our counties are much more rural with farmers and land and that sort of thing. So that access to mental health care treatment is a little more difficult in terms of transportation.
Okay.
But we're a very diverse community. We have, 20% of our population is African American. We have another 5% that is Asian, and we have a very high Hmong population as well.
That's interesting. You know, I know your predecessor told me where Dane County was, but of course, you know, I don't remember what I did 10 minutes ago, so, you know.
Yeah.
The older I get, the more it goes away, you know. So.
Absolutely.
But I have to ask, how did you get into this type of work?
Yeah, that's a really great question. So I myself live with a mental illness. I have bipolar disorder, generalized anxiety disorder, and what they call trichotillomania.
Okay.
And that is a hair pulling disorder, oftentimes accompanied with people who have OCD, but I have not been diagnosed with OCD. Don't meet the diagnostic criteria for that. So a couple of years ago, I had gone through my first major depressive episode and was in a psychiatric ward for several weeks. And when I came out of that, I was connected to NAMI Dane County for support groups and for education classes. They also offer a writing workshop. And that really was a great creative outlet for me because I still didn't understand my diagnosis at that point in time, and I felt so alone, you know, that nobody really understood the way that I felt. And until I became involved with NAMI, my whole worldview changed. I realized I wasn't alone, that there were so many people out in our community that could relate to what I was going through, and it really changed my worldview. I started volunteering with NAMI for the last 2 years. I helped coordinate our walk, serving on the walk committee. I helped write articles for our newsletter, and really just was a mental health advocate within the community. I would talk to anybody and everybody willing to share my story, expose my vulnerabilities, and, you know, it's a topic that I didn't realize affected so many people until I actually voiced my own experiences, and that was a very powerful tool for recovery. And so when Bonnie retired, the executive director position opened up, and I thought, you know, I'll give it a shot. I'm really passionate about the work. I have the skill set, my background, the personal lived experience, and just, like, that dedication and that passion, which is so essential in really doing the work that we do in this office. And I applied for it, and I was like, there is no way I'm going to get this job. I'm a young professional. I'm 27 years old. Who's going to hire someone like me? And I, you know, it was just a fabulous first interview. The second interview, I got to talk with all of the board members. And the next day, I was offered the job. You know, NAMI Dane County, we're the original founding chapter of the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And that's such a great honor and privilege for us to be at the heart of where this movement that has gone national and has so many supporters and people backing it really began, with the dedication and the passion of four mothers whose sons had schizophrenia. It's amazing to see how much it's grown, but we're at a time where we really want to reclaim our glory, in the sense that we've kind of been stuck in the 80s. And, you know, there's advancements in psychiatric care into mental health, not just mental illness, and how we can mold sort of those ideas around mental health issues, our physical health issues as well. So
yeah.
We're kind of rebuilding infrastructure at this point in time, a lot of grandiose ideas about things that we can do within the community to meet some of those unmet needs, and we're really looking forward and excited to that.
Well, that's awesome. Did you do In Our Own Voice?
I do In Our Own Voice. So even now I do that. That's
right.
a really great way for me to stay connected to the community that I live in. I also travel to other parts of the state that are a little bit more remote and have trouble finding people to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I have really good relationships with our law enforcement and corrections officers, as well as the state prison system. And I go out and share my story and do some educational presentations. But really, you know, not just talking about my story, but also recognizing that these individuals are in very high stress situations. They're first responders as mental health care professionals who aren't trained in mental health care professional aspects. And so we really want to recognize that we want to take care of their mental health as well. And,
and
we have a common goal of public safety and taking care of people.
Yeah, it's ironic. This coming Thursday, it is in our family-to-family class, my wife and I are teaching, it's In Our Own Voice is coming, you know.
Yeah.
And ironically enough, it's a very good friend of mine. In fact, we call each other brothers because I never had a brother. I'm an only child, you know, so I always call him my brother.
Yeah, brother from another mother.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm the older brother, you know, he's younger than I am. Not by much, but he's younger than I am. But he's coming, and along with a young lady that's in her late 20s, who, you know, are going to give the In Our Own Voice presentation. So it's a powerful method of getting the word out that, you know, that you can have a life in spite of having mental illness, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and I know, like myself, my wife and I, we have four kids, and our youngest son has schizophrenia. And he was hospitalized after two suicide attempts. He was hospitalized for a little over 2.5 years. And when he got out, he was in and out of the hospital more times than we care to remember. But, you know, and now it's been almost 20 years, and he is doing very well. He's an anniversary this year, this month, his 1 year anniversary on a job. And,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And he loves it. And all indications, they love him. And, you know, it's great because any volunteer is one day a week at the hospital. And, so, you know, it's just, he's come so long. He has his own apartment, you know, and he's been epileptic since he's five. He's been taking medication. So taking medication has never been a problem. The problem has been that it's not a problem, but he has the right to know what effects it has and why they're changing it, why they're increasing it or decreasing it, and which is fine, you know. And we encourage him to be ask questions, you know. So, but okay. Dane County programs, NAMI programs at Dane County, are they pretty much the same as what we have in Hunterdon County? Or
there's slightly some differences. I think, so we're an agency that has all paid staff, so we're fortunate that we can grow some of those signature NAMI programs and really tailor new initiatives that are specific to our community. So, like you all, we do the family-to-family class. We also offer a peer-to-peer class, which functions similar to family-to-family, but it's intended for those who are living with a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
And we do offer the signature support groups as well, but we've expanded that to meet the needs within our community. So we also offer a women's anxiety and depression support group. We offer a bipolar depression support group. And we're currently working on a model for dual diagnosis because that's a large unmet need within our community. is that dichotomy or that silo of treatment between having a mental illness and also a co-occurring substance use disorder.
Right, right.
So support groups exist for the substance abuse and support groups exist for the mental illness, but to really have a profound impact in terms of recovery for individuals who are struggling with both issues, it really needs to be talked about
sure.
and treated concurrently. And so we've recognized that that is something missing within our community, and we want to be able to fill that. And we take a lot of calls from people who are asking for those kinds of support groups, and mm-hmm. it always breaks our heart to be like, nothing exists here in Madison. The closest kind of group that you could access is an hour and a half away.
Yeah.
And, of course, the population that we typically work with, they're on disability, low income, and they don't have transportation.
They don't have a car to drive them, you know, an hour and a half, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So that poses a barrier. So those are just additional support groups that we're offering. We also do a writing workshop for people who just want that creative outlet.
Mm-hmm.
And we are working on implementing a mindfulness and yoga practice workshop, which is going to be led a little bit different than our other programs, which are peer-led. These are run by certified mindfulness coaches and therapists because you certainly have to take into consideration, you know, individuals who have PTSD, that might not
sure.
be an ideal sort of group. But we're really excited. We've seen the significant research that mindfulness and yoga and just having those healthy coping mechanisms and skills building really helps your mental health and your well-being, and has been directly linked with decrease in attempted suicides. And that is a huge epidemic within our community, is we're seeing a lot of suicidal ideation. The
mm-hmm.
larger
yeah.
percentage of kids in different surveys that we're conducting reporting that within the last 30 days, they've thought about killing themselves, and others have attempted it. And we've also had a wave of several, within the last month, like 5 or 6 teens who have died by suicide. And so
yeah.
really becoming a public health epidemic and what we want to focus our energy on. So we're piloting this mindfulness workshop, particularly for adults to begin with. We want to see work out the kinks and how it works, and then we'll be adapting that and taking it into the schools with the school district.
Right. And so, trust me, it's not only in Dane County.
Yeah,
it's all over the U.S.
Yeah, and it's
you
so
know,
heartbreaking.
It is. It's, you know, I personally know at least 5 people who have lost their child. Well, I say child, you know, young adult. And it's just so sad.
It really is. We have a young man, excuse me, who died by suicide about a month and a half, 2 months ago. And the parents came in. They made a large donation to our agency in the amount of roughly $25,000. And while it's such a tragedy, it's a blessing in the sense that we have this huge focus on youth early intervention and prevention initiatives right now. And so that money is really going to be able to help within our community launch some new
sure.
Programs that reach out to the teen and young adult population. So with that money, we've created 2 new programs. One is called an Honest, Open, Proud Training. It's a 6-week class for teenagers who are living with a mental illness, and it's really talking about how to tell your story and weighing the pros and cons of disclosure. So it's giving them that opportunity to take ownership over their story. They can decide whether or not they want to disclose, but it's creating that safe space where people have gone through similar situations.
Right.
They can really answer some of those questions that are nagging at them, but maybe they haven't talked about. So that is a program launching in the fall. We have 3 schools that we'll be taking that to. We also offer a teen support group in 2 of the area high schools. And the last program we're implementing is called Raise Your Voice. And that's a high school club that reaches anybody interested in mental health issues. You don't have to have a mental illness to participate in the group. But it's student-led. We really want to provide leadership opportunities for them. And that program will bring in the Honest Open Proud training for those who are interested, the teen support group. It also looks at parent training, so we offer the NAMI Basics program for parents who have a kid living with a mental illness. And then it also focuses on teacher training. So one of our partnerships with the Madison School District, every new teacher has to go through a teacher orientation, and we have been able to form a collaboration with them where we come in and do an hour training. And it complements the requirement for them to go through youth mental health first aid training. We don't want to put them in the position that they're diagnosing children, but we do want to provide them the tools to recognize signs and symptoms.
Absolutely.
You know, that prompt, maybe we should be looking into this a little bit further and get them connected to a mental health professional. And so we're really excited for that program. It has those three components. We'll also be providing leadership opportunities for the youth to go down to the middle schools and elementary schools to lead sessions that are relevant and culturally appropriate to that population.
Trust me, you may not realize how valuable it is to be in the schools, because we have problems getting into the schools here.
Yeah, we have run into some of those issues, particularly one high school we're working with right now, where the young man, his family donated that large amount of money to us, their school is very hesitant to let us come in and talk about suicide prevention, because talking about it, there's this myth that it'll...
Oh, absolutely, and it's totally a myth.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just like you don't want people to suffer in silence. And help starts with a conversation, understanding that, you know, there's so many people just like you struggling, and you are not alone, and it's okay to talk, and it's okay to speak.
And a lot of times that's all they're asking for, is if someone asked them something, they would talk about it.
Yep, absolutely. You know, how are you doing today? I can tell, you know, you're feeling a little bit down. If you want to talk to me, I'd love to listen.
Right, right.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just that reaching out, and that's the kind of culture we want to foster. But we have had, you know, we understand the difficulties and sort of penetrating that culture within the schools. There's, you know, that stigma exists. And that's part of what NAMI is dedicated to doing, is to eliminating that stigma and bringing awareness. And we really value the opportunity to bring in people who have experience and live with a mental illness and are similar to that age demographic as well. So we also coordinate a panel. We're fortunate to have the University of Wisconsin-Madison in our town, and they have a NAMI UW chapter campus. So that is student-run by individuals who are between the ages of 18 and 22.
Yeah, we have that in a couple of the colleges around here, too.
Yeah, oh my gosh, they're so great to work with, particularly as we're expanding our outreach to the young adult population. It's really about credibility. You know, if one of our in our own voice speakers came in who's in their mid-30s or late 50s, you know, they have less credibility with the high school population. So it's nice to have that partnership where we're coordinating panel discussions with classrooms, with soccer teams. Really fortunate to have several schools in the area highlight NAMI. Dane County is part of their charity annual game that they do. And so that presents a lot of opportunities for us to go out there and to promote. You know, there are resources that exist within the community. We have crisis lines. If you don't want to talk on the phone, we have text crisis lines, you know, really targeting the type of communication that sort of demographic feels really comfortable in communicating with.
Right.
And, of course, there's a lot of controversy around it, but I think it's something to consider. In providing a medium that they are most comfortable with and that they trust in.
Sure. And it's, you know, that's what it's all about. Do you have in your area a, they call it the Getting Together Center. It's a, it's an housing house like that. It's all peer run. The manager has a mental health issue, and everybody there has some sort of problem. But it's under it's basically under the hospital, but it's like totally run by peers, and they can go there. They have pool table. They have, you know, movies they watch. They hold the bipolar depression support group, you know, like there. Do you have something like that?
Yeah, we have a few programs. One is called Cornucopia, and that's just a hangout spot people can go through during the day, and they provide engagement opportunities, whether it's an art class or like woodworking, or they just want to go in and cook a meal or sit with friends and have a cup of coffee or watch a movie. It just kind of gives them a place to go to feel connected to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a new peer-run respite center that just opened a couple months ago, and that is all peer-run. It's a short-term stabilization program for individuals who are not at the crisis level in which they need to go into a psychiatric ward or be admitted to the hospital.
Right.
But at the same time, they need a little bit more wraparound services, time to get their emotions in check and
mm-hmm.
get back on their medications. And so that peer-run respite center is open to any individual who wants to come in. You can stay up to 5 days, and you have to come in and work with a case manager who also is a peer specialist and have a plan to reintegrate back into your normal everyday routine.
Right.
But it's been very well received within the community.
Well, that's good.
Packed all of the time, and that's really meeting an unmet need within our community as well, because we have post-diversion programs and we have pre-diversion programs, but we really don't have those things in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And that short-term stabilization is so important. We really need to beef up those kinds of services, because not everybody is at a stage 4 at a mental health crisis, but they could really benefit from
right.
a structured environment that could get them back on the right path.
That's right. I have to ask, you have a thing here, 60 Minutes Rikers Island?
Yes.
Rikers Island is down our way.
Did you see that?
No, I didn't, actually, and I was wondering what it is, you know?
Yeah, so 60 Minutes did roughly a 15-segment on Rikers Island. It's the largest jail, I think, in the entire nation, and it's also functioning as the largest mentally ill population within a jail. And so it comes at a time where there's this huge focus on how do we reduce the number of people with mental illness in jail. You know, they need
mm-hmm.
treatment, especially if they're nonviolent offenders.
Right.
Jail may not be the appropriate place for them. However, what Rikers Island highlighted was really just the failure of the system to serve people who have mental illness in jails, and it highlighted two specific instances that are, of course, extreme, but they did happen. Is one individual was out on parole. He had a technical violation. They didn't mention what the technical violation was, but when he came in, he was obviously off his medications, and he had bipolar disorder, and they show a video of him making a phallic symbol out of a towel and lewd gestures towards an officer, and their response to that was to put him into solitary confinement.
Mm.
He was in solitary confinement for 7 days. He kept overrunning the toilet water, so they shut off the water. He became coated in his feces and his urine, and there is a very horrible smell coming out. And finally, people were walking by, just ignoring him, looking through the window, and a mental health director never came down to evaluate him. The end result was this individual died of a heart attack. He hadn't been seen for 7 days or let out, and it was a preventable death. It just highlights sort of, you know, something that breaks
right.
your heart, and it also makes your blood boil. And the other individual that they highlighted was a man who obviously was in a crisis mode within the jail, and several officers had started beating him to the point that he had a perforated diaphragm. Mm. And instead of getting him treatment, they put him in a solitary confinement cell. And by the time they actually wanted to bring him out to get treatment, he ended up dying.
Yeah.
And so the 60 Minutes piece really highlights the failure of the system in terms of the training of officers. How do you appropriately and effectively respond in that these two extreme cases, while not common, highlight the fact that those safeguards don't exist. And the way that we respond to certain behaviors of individuals who have a mental illness are sometimes extreme. And a lot of that stems out of fear. Like for somebody who is manic and is making phallic symbols and lewd gestures, like does that really constitute being stuck in solitary confinement for 7 days? That sort of thing. And so the Rikers Island video really just highlights the failure of the system to hold people accountable, and it highlights how there's so much more work to be done in terms of training our officers. You know, there's this distrust between individuals and family members who have loved ones who've gone through the criminal justice system and come out, and they keep cycling in and out. And that distrust stems a lot from the way that they're treated within the
jail. And not only that,
yeah,
there's more people in jail with mental illness than they are in psychiatric hospitals across the country.
Yeah, and that is unacceptable. You know, we need more treatment beds. That's where people need to go. Treatment is the solution, along with wraparound services. Jail, unfortunately, they go in, and oftentimes they come out worse than when they went
in. Right.
And for Dane County, for example, what we've learned, and we're fortunate to have a sheriff who is very open and working with us and passionate about this issue, wanting to make change. But I went and did a jail tour, and it just broke my heart. You know, they don't even have...
Been there.
they don't even have a mental health unit.
Right.
If you have a mental illness in Dane County Jail, you go to solitary confinement.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever sat in a solitary confinement cell, you know, the lights are flickering, it's sterile, you hear people screaming down the hall. It's very traumatic, and it exacerbates people who are already symptomatic. It's horrible for anybody, but if you can imagine, if you're off your meds and you're hearing voices, how much more scary
sure.
and awful that could be.
Absolutely.
But we've also just highlighted, you know, the failure of getting adequate evaluations in a timely manner. So, for example, in our community, we have psychiatrists who can only come in on a Monday and Tuesday. So if an individual comes in crisis, the police have dropped him off, we can't divert him to community-based services, and he needs to go into jail, if he comes in on a Wednesday, he doesn't get to be seen until the following Monday, and they do not give him medicine that they come in with because they can't be sure it's the actual medicine.
Are you talking about coming into a hospital?
Into the jail.
Oh, into the jail. Okay.
Yeah, into the jail.
Nice.
And so what happens is they just immediately are cut off from their medications if they had it. If they weren't on medication, they don't get to be stabilized until the following week.
Right.
And that's just unfortunate. So we definitely, we're working with the jail. We're working with our police department, our county board of supervisors, our Department of Human Services, and we're developing a community-wide plan that says, how are we going to address this issue? Because we recognize that we are really stressing the resources that exist within the jail. Money doesn't exist to bring in more services. And so what are some other strategies that we can help with? Because, unfortunately, they become the de facto first responders, even though we don't want them to be put in that kind of position.
Yeah, we're very fortunate. We have a very what's the word, knowledgeable prosecutor. And in fact, he was a social worker prior to going to law school. And he, the social work he did was with mental health issues. So he's very cognizant of what, you know, a person who is suffering from mental illness is going through. And they have, they've instituted what they call a jail diversion program. And, you know, depending on what the person is accused of, you know, obviously, if it's, you know, a serious crime like rape or
right.
armed robbery or something like that, it may not take effect. Mm-hmm. But if it's, you know, petty larceny or, you know, auto theft or something like that where no one's hurt or threatened or anything, a lot of times they'll divert them, you know, mm-hmm. in this jail yeah. diversion program.
So, yeah, and that's something we're really... we're making a lot of headway. Recently, our community launched a specific unit within the Madison Police Department called the Mental Health Liaison Office. And
okay.
there are five liaison officers who handle every mental health crisis call within our community. They're trained in crisis intervention training, which is provided by NAMI to corrections officers and to law enforcement, as well as dispatch. And those individuals are, you know, spending maybe 3 or 4 hours with individuals instead of taking them directly to the hospital or slapping handcuffs on them and pushing them in the back
right.
of the door. Somebody is, you know, really depressed, talking about cutting their wrists, and just take that opportunity to sit down with them and show them some empathy and compassion and get them to talk.
Mm-hmm.
We can often de-escalate that situation from a point that requires them to go to a hospital. And so it's been really awesome just to have that collaboration, and we're now bringing that into the jail system as well.
Have any of your members in NAMI gone to the CIT training?
Our members? No, we have had several go through CIP, which is crisis intervention.
Right, crisis intervention training.
Yeah, and that's a 16-hour training. The one we do with law enforcement and corrections officers is 40 hours.
Right. No, that's well, that's the only one we have.
Okay.
Here is 40 hours.
Okay.
And I want to say five members of our board and one that wasn't a board member have gone. I've gone through it.
And what do you think?
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
And I think that it works. I think it works if there is no layperson there.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it works a lot better if there is somebody there.
Yeah.
Somebody, say, like you or me or whatever, you know. you know, because they... After the 5-day course, I can't tell you how many of the police officers come up to me and said, I'm so glad that you were here
mm-hmm.
because you gave another side to the story, you know. And I had told them right in the beginning, I says, we're not looking to see any police officer hurt, but we don't want to see our loved one hurt either, mm-hmm. you know. And I know what I do and what NAMI here does and suggests to people who have had to call the police in the past is that when things are quiet and calm, go to your local police station. Explain what happens. You know, if your loved one is having an attack, say, or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, and he's going off the wall. So that when they call the police and the police respond, if they're not CIT trained, at least they will, first of all, they try to send CIT, you know, individuals, trained individuals. But if not, at least the police officer knows what they're getting into. It's
yeah.
not like they're walking into it, you know, blind, you know.
Yeah, and that's something we really stress in our communication with our members. It is building those relationships with the officers before there's ever a crisis situation
mm-hmm.
because that
Absolutely.
Really just impacts the outcome of what would happen, you know, knowing sure. to request the CIT officer as well when you call 911.
Right, and that's what we suggest also. But if there isn't any, if you have it down, you know, if you went to the police station when everything was quiet and told what sometimes happens if your loved one has a moment, you know, or whatever you want to call it, you know, so that they're aware of what it is when they go to a house, you know. And I went out with a crisis intervention team and from the hospital. And it, three police officers were there and a young man who was quite big and heavy and, you know, he was about 21, I think. And he wouldn't come out of his bedroom. And, you know, and they talked to him for almost an hour and 15 minutes through the door.
Yeah.
You know, and 2-3 years ago, that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, you just break down the door.
Exactly. They'd have kicked the door down and they would have thrown him down, handcuffed him, and took him in, you know.
Yeah.
You know, after an hour and 15 minutes, they came down to the parents and said, you know, we're going to have to go in. You know, because, let's face it, Madison is a lot bigger than our, than Flemington, you know.
Yeah.
And, you know, in our area, too, is very rural and, you know, horse farms and dairy farms and, you know, what have you. So they said, you know, but we promise we will do it as gently as possible. And they did, because I witnessed it. They took the young man down, but they took him down on the bed, mm-hmm. you know, in his room rather than on the floor,
yeah.
you know, and they cuffed him. Yes, they had to, but it was, you know, it was very, I want to say nice, but it was very wonderful to see that they didn't just bust the door down and throw him down and, you know, yada, yada. That they did talk to him for an hour and 15 minutes, you know. And
yeah. And one thing we're trying to do, like, is building that trust and that relationship between our membership, our family members, and individuals with lived experience and the police department. And what we're putting together is, you know, on one hand, we're working with the officers. We're telling them, you know, use these kinds of body language or, you know, don't stand with your hands on your hips, kind of have a non-threatening stance. Don't ever touch them unless you absolutely have to. Those sorts of things. And now we'd really like to do an educational component with the family members to be like, you know, this is what you can expect in different situations that we're going to be responding to, so that there's really that open dialogue and open communication and understanding about both sides.
Right, exactly. And the other thing, too, is if the ill person is sitting down, don't stand over them and look down.
Get down on their level.
Yeah, I'll get down on a knee or sit in a chair across from them or something, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just those little things, you know, that sometimes are not, are lost in the tension of the moment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. You know, it's just a different philosophy than what they've historically been trained in. You
sure,
know,
absolutely.
They're trained to come in 15 minutes, take control of the situation, and get out of there. And
right,
crisis
right.
Crisis intervention is just a completely different model. And it's funny when we talk with individuals after the training, you know, we get a lot of people coming up and like, wow, that was really, like, eye-opening. Thank you for being here. But it's so difficult in the role-playing scenarios to, like, use different body language,
mm-hmm.
have a different stance, because that's never what they've been trained in.
That right.
is an adjustment, but it's interesting getting their feedback, and it's always been positive. And, you know, I always try to highlight, you know, as much tension as in the community there sometimes is between law enforcement and the way that individuals with mental illness have been treated, there are plenty of people on the force who really care and have that empathy and compassion.
Absolutely.
In every tragedy that does happen, there's an opportunity for us to come together and be like, something happened, something went wrong. What can we do to support each other so that this doesn't happen again? And that's really the approach that I take in the community is not pointing fingers and not taking blame, but really figuring out, here's what went wrong, and what can we do to help you guys prevent
right.
such tragedy from happening again.
Right. What is the Chapter 51 involuntary commitment in Wisconsin?
Yeah, so our Chapter 51 voluntary commitment is very complicated, as I'm sure it is in your state.
Well, uncomplicate it and just keep it simple.
Yeah. I'll try to keep it as simple as possible. But it's a topic that we probably get the most questions about when somebody calls, particularly a family member who's just like, my loved one is just absolutely, in a crisis situation and we need to get them help. So in terms of, like, how we go about, we also call them civil commitments. So involuntary treatment is not an easy or straightforward experience, but it is sometimes necessary in order to get your loved one the treatment that they need in
Absolutely.
Order to become healthier and more stable. So Chapter 51 is our legal statute. It governs not just mental health policy, but also substance abuse policy and what those procedures are for involuntary mental health services. So a commitment begins in one of three ways within Wisconsin, and this is also interpreted differently across counties, which makes that even more frustrating.
Yes.
So the first way is like our emergency detention by law enforcement. And it's interesting within our community now, in order to do an emergency detention on an individual in a mental health crisis call, it has to be okayed by our community mental health center. So every mental health crisis call, if a police officer thinks they need to go to the hospital under emergency detention, they have to call the community mental health center, our crisis workers, review the case, and the crisis worker is the one that determines, yes, they need to go and have emergency detention.
Yeah, the crisis worker is like a screener.
Yeah, the crisis right. worker is a screener. It's definitely reduced the number of emergency detentions that we have and diverted people into community-based treatment services.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also caused a little bit of friction because, you know, you have the police officer there and being like, no, this person really needs
right.
to go to the hospital. So it's been interesting. That's a relatively new policy change within the last year, so they're trying to work out the kinks with it. You can also do an emergency detention by a treatment provider. So if a individual has a psychiatrist or a therapist and they're going in and they feel imminent threat to themselves or to other people or homicidal, they can initiate that emergency detention. And then we also have three-party petitions. But I will say in Wisconsin, a three-party petition is nearly impossible to get going.
Mm.
We very much value individual patient rights
right.
to not force them to get treatment. But at the same time, it creates difficulties. Case managers are gone. Corrections officers are gone. Who's there at the end of the day? It's your family member, and they know that individual the best. So it's kind of a delicate balance between how do you respect the individual's rights to not want treatment when very obviously they do need treatment.
Right, right.
So the commitments occur, I'm sure it's the same in your state. They have to have a mental illness, a drug dependency, or a developmental disability.
Mm-hmm.
It also has to be identified as treatable, and they have to meet one of five standards of dangerousness. And this is the part that I have so much trouble with, because what happens in Wisconsin, particularly Dane County, if you want to go forward with a three-party petition and your loved one is manic on the streets, running through, like, naked and on a bridge, talking about grandiose ideas, obviously they're in need of treatment and stabilization, but they haven't posed a threat to anybody at that point in time. They're not a threat to themselves, and they're not a danger or, is what
right,
you classify
right.
to another individual. So because they don't meet that standard, maybe they meet the first two, but they don't meet the standard of dangerousness, they can't go forward with a third-party petition. So what that ultimately means is, for me to get my loved one treatment who is in crisis, they have to be hurting themselves or they have
That's
to have
right.
a gun and
right.
want to go shoot somebody. And that is so unfortunate that it has to reach that level, because you want intervention to happen before you ever get there. And that is a huge policy priority for NAMI Dane County to address within our community, is we want people to get treatment early. We don't want to say, you know, if your loved one is not threatening to kill themselves, if they don't have a plan, if they don't have a plan to go and kill somebody, sorry, we can't help you go forward on that third-party petition.
You know, yeah, I understand perfectly what you're saying. If someone is naked, running down the street, screaming and hollering, and, you know, et cetera, you know, going up on it by a bridge, I'm sorry, but they're not right. You know, there's something going on, and shouldn't we just take them to the hospital and find out, you know?
Exactly.
I agree with you 100%. I mean, you know, but I know sometimes you just want to take the people who make these laws and choke them.
You know, that's something we stress, is like, we've seen a lot of policy made at the county and the state level here that just is not involving the people who are affected by mental illness.
Right, right.
That sort of goes along with, like, no taxation without representation. It's like nothing about us without us. And, you know, our voices need to be at the table. These are the people who've lived experiences, and you're making policies that impact their livelihood without full understanding of what those consequences are at the end of the day. And I'm sorry, there's just something messed up about saying you've got to try to kill yourself before I can get you a hospital bed.
You know, we've got about 2 minutes left. What I'd like, if anybody would like to reach out, if anybody in Wisconsin would like to reach out to you or anywhere, because this is the internet, so it's going all over. Do you have a phone number you want to give out?
Sure. Our phone number is 608-249-7188.
And if they wanted to speak to you, Lindsay?
Just ask for me.
Okay. And I can't tell you how happy I am that you've been on the program.
Well,
and
thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I really appreciate it.
And trust me, I will have you back again.
Perfect. I look forward to it.
Because there are other things I want to talk to you about, but we're running out of time.
Yeah.
You know?
It's not always what happens.
But it is, you know, and that's good, because I can have you back then, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
If I ever get up around Madison, Wisconsin, I'll look you up.
Yes, for sure. We'd be happy to host you.
Yeah, we do some camping, so there's areas up that way that, you know, you can camp at, so.
Yeah, beautiful country, part of the country out here.
Right. I wouldn't want to be there in the winter, but.
See, I'm weird. I love the winter.
Yeah, I do too. I love it in Southern California, you know.
Yeah, where it's like 70.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, I don't mind the cold. It's the, you know, I can't handle the snow anymore.
Yeah.
I can't, you know,
my
snow blower and all that out. And, you know, I can't, that's just too much anymore. But, Lindsay, I can't thank you enough. I appreciate you being on, and I hope you have a wonderful summer.
Thank you so much. You too.
And I mean it. I will have you back.
Great. We look forward to it. Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye. And remember, folks, we'll be here same time, same station next week. And just remember, mental health really does matter.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
USA Radio News with Audrey Strong.
Donald Trump can't get a majority support, within the Republican Party. He's only been able to do that in one state, his own state. So when this is a two-person contest, then that's the type of strategic dynamic we would like to see.
Ted Cruz's national spokesman Ron Nearing talking about the latest strategy in the presidential race. Cruz and John Kasich are now working together to stop Donald Trump from winning the Republican presidency.